Although my talk would be not directly about entanglement-assisted information theory, but some problem related to this, and also at the end of talk, I will talk about an example of a problem in which assistance by entanglement can be quantified and also can be compared to the assistance by shared randomness. And this is a joint work with my friend Amin Gohari. Okay, so let me start with an example. So you are probably familiar with this Gaussian entanglement. It's a measure of entanglement. It has lots of good properties, and it defined via a very simple optimization problem. So if we have a bipartite state rho AB, the Gaussian entanglement of between the entanglement between A and B is measured in terms of the conditional mutual information between A and B. So we consider C as an auxiliary register and rho ABC to be an extension of rho AB. And then we take the infimum over all of this extension of the mutual information between A and B condition on C. And the mutual information is, you know, we have these usual equations, the entropy. I denote the entropy by H. And this is the von Neumann entropy. The conditional entropy is defined. The conditional entropy of A given B is defined as the entropy of AB minus entropy of B. And we have this standard equation for the conditional mutual information. So you probably know that although we have this very simple expression for this Gaussian entanglement, we cannot compute it because we don't have any bound on the dimension of the optimal extension C. Okay? Even characterizing, I mean, even the fateful of Gaussian entanglement was proven very recently that the Gaussian entanglement is equal to zero if and only if the state is entangled. Sorry, the state is separable. So although we have a very simple expression, we cannot compute it, as I said, because we don't have any dimension bound. So I want to talk about this dimension bound. Suppose we have some expression in terms of like mutual information or conditional entropy, things like that, where we condition or where we optimize over some auxiliary quantum register. Okay. I want to talk about this kind of optimization problems. And I want to ask what kind of things can we say? Can we somehow bound the dimension of the optimal optimal point or anything like that. And this is the same, and we have the same problem for some other quantities that appear in quantum information theory. I really don't know much about these two examples, but I know they exist. So one of them is entangling capacity of bipartite unitary channels. The other one is the quantum channel capacity assisted with symmetric side channels. And both of these things are also these quantities, information theoretic quantities, can be written in terms of some optimization over some auxiliary quantum register. But again, we cannot compute them because we don't have any dimension bound. So you already can guess that this problem is hard. Even from the example of a Gaussian entanglement, you can guess that solving this problem in general is hard. But let's restrict ourselves to some simpler example. So I want to restrict to the case where let's say, suppose that the given state in this rho AB in the Gaussian entanglement expression is classical. So suppose A and B are classical and C, the extension, is quantum. Okay. In that case, it's easy. Basically, we can restrict ourselves to a classical C and we can actually compute it. We can easily see that this infimum is equal to zero. So probably if the other quantities that appear in the optimization problem that we want to compute, if everything is classical, but the auxiliary register that we are optimizing over is quantum, then the problem is probably easier. So I want to go into this in one more example. So I want to talk a bit more in detail about this Grave-Winner problem and the problem of entanglement system Grave-Winner. So I would say this problem was actually a motivation of starting this work. So let me tell you what the Grave-Winner problem is. Everything is classical. So there's a one sender, Alice, and a bunch of and a group of receivers that I'm going to call Bob. Bob 1, Bob 2, up to Bob N. Okay. And Alice receives some inputs, X1 to Xn. So this Xi might be even correlated. So there's a fixed distribution on X1 and up to Xn. And Alice receives samples from this distribution. So we have a joint distribution, and Alice receives samples from this distribution. And the goal of Alice is to send Xj to Bob J. Okay? So Bob 1 is going to receive X1, Bob 2 is going to receive X2, and so on. Okay? How they can do that, Alice can send a public information, a public message to all Bobs at the same time at rate R0. Okay? So there's a noiseless channel, public channel, that the message can be broadcasted to all Bobs. And also, Alice can send private information. So Alice can send private information at rate RJ to Bob J. So using these kind of channels, again, these are noiseless channels, and we kind of bound the amount of the rate of these channels to actually achieve this goal. As I said, everything is classical. The messages are classical. The inputs of Alice is classical. Everything is classical. And this problem was solved. The set of n, these tuples R0 to Rn that are achievable are characterized in 70s by Gray and Viner. Such a tuple is achievable if and only if there exists some auxiliary classical random variable C such that these inequalities hold. Okay? You can think of C, this auxiliary random variable, as the common message, as this public message. Then the rate of public message should be greater than the mutual information between the input and the message, the public message. And the other inequalities basically come from Slepy and Wolf theory. So anyway, we have this theory, and we want to ask what happens when we have shared entanglement between Alice and Bob. Okay. Again, the same problem. Everything is classical, but we want to compute this rate region assisted by entanglement. And this problem was solved by Andreas Winter last year. So he shows that when we have entanglement, arbitrary amount of entanglement, R0 to Rn is achievable if and only if there are n auxiliary quantum registers, Q1 to Qn, such that R0 is greater than the mutual information between X1 to Xn and Qs, and Rj is greater than the conditional entropy of Xj given Qj. So as you say, it's very similar to the previous case, but instead of 1C, we have N Qs. Like, instead of one classical random variable, we have n quantum register. Basically, we have n quantum register because of the no cloning theory. We have to consider n quantum register. And you should think of these QJs as, so the QJ, you should think of it as the Bob J's part of the entanglement state. And that's, I mean, proving this result is really not hard. But the question is still there, whether entanglement helps in the Grave-Winner problem or not. We have the capacity, the rate region, but can we compute this rate region and can we compare it to the classical rate region or not? The question that I'm interested in, whether entanglement really helps in the Grave-Winner problem or not. Probably, if we compute this region, if you consider the union of all of these points for all auxiliary QJs, probably we get the same region as in the classical case. So we can replace these QJs with some classical C. In that case, entanglement doesn't help. And so, I mean, maybe it's the case that entanglement doesn't help, because we know that entanglement doesn't help in the usual scenario of communicating over a noisy classical channel. In that case, we know that entanglement doesn't help if you have a point-to-point classical usual channel. Both the entanglement assisted and the usual capacities come from this maximization of the mutual information between the input and output, and so entanglement doesn't help. So probably it's the case. Although the expressions are the same, we may get the same capacity region. So to simplify the problem, so if we have here n qs, n quantum axial register, I'm going to replace it with one q. I mean, think of the whole n q1 to qj as one q, one axial quantum register. Then the mutual information between x1 to xn and q1 to qn is the same as the mutual information between x1 to xn and q. And also, we have an inequality between the entropy of xj given qj and the entropy of xj given q. So anyway, if we show that if we have n plus 1 numbers coming from this conditioning on a quantum axial quantum register, and if we could replace it with a classical register C, classical random variable, then we can easily show that capacity, that rate region is the same as the classical rate region. So I want to ask this problem. Given these random variables, x1 to xn, and one extension to a quantum register, I compute these n plus 1 numbers, whether there exists a classical extension to C such that these numbers are all the same or not. So let me give you another example. Suppose x, y, and z are three random variables with some fixed distribution. And I want to compute the supremum of the difference between mutual information of C and Y and C and Z, where C is, again, an auxiliary random variable satisfying that Markov chain condition, where when I write three random variables, I mean this conditional mutual information is zero. You probably know that in an optimization problem of like this, we can bound the dimension of this auxiliary random variable. Why is it the case? It's just to remind you, we can write down the difference between this mutual information as something which is constant, independent of C. This mutual information y and z is independent of c, and something which is in terms of a condition on these auxiliary random variables c. And also, we know that if you take like the last term, entropy of y given c, we can express it as in terms of the average, somehow an average of the entropy of the of entropy of y condition on c being a particular value. Okay, that's something we know about conditioning a classical random variable. And so what does it mean? It means that basically we can write down the conditional mutual information as a convex combination of some entropies. On the other hand, we know the Cauchy theorem. If you have some subset of the real space, the n-dimensional real space, any point in the convex hull of that set can be written as a convex combination of at most n plus 1 points. So like in this, in two dimension, any point in the convex hull of some set can be written as a convex combination of at most 3 points. It's inside some triangle. Okay? And using this Cauchy-Teodorin theorem, you can easily show that the dimension of C can be assumed to be bounded. Basically, by this, you can easily show that the dimension of C is at most, can be taken at most like the alphabet size of x times the alphabet size of y times the alphabet size of z plus 1, probably, something like that. But even something better than that can be proved. Anyway, so we have some dimension bound basically because of this Cauchy theorem. And the question is that what happens when we take C to be quantum? Okay. The first question is that can we actually compute it? Can we find a dimension bound at this auxiliary quantum register or not? And second, whether the optimal value is the same as the classical optimal value or not. So we have these questions in mind. So I would like to know to compute regions involving some distribution on some random variables, and then I have some auxiliary quantum register, some extension. I want to compute some a mutual information on entropy in terms of those variables. I want to compute regions involving of this form. Also, I want to compare these kind of regions to the classical ones when I consider this extension to be classical. And as I said, as we saw in the example of Grave-Wiener, these kind of questions are related to the problem of assistance by entanglement. So you want to compare the shared randomness with shared entanglement. Okay. So to give you the first result, I should start with some notation. Let x1 to xn be some finite sets, and I want to consider the probability simplex over the product of these sets. Okay. So I want to consider all distribution on x1 to xn. And for each of these distribution, I can compute the entropy of x1, entropy of x2, and so on. So for each distribution, I can come up with n numbers. And then take the graph of this map, basically this distribution is basically a bunch of numbers, the positive numbers that sum to 1, put them together, and then concatenate it with h of x1 to xn. And now take the convex hull of this set. So I'm going to call this set, this graph of this map, to be G, and then take the convex hull of this set. Basically, because of the expression I just showed you that computing entropy condition on some classical random variables is the same as some convex combination, you can easily see that taking the convex hull is basically means that considering this expression like this, just replace this entropy with some conditional entropy where C is some auxiliary register. And we can compute this convex hull basically because we have some dimension bound on this auxiliary C. Okay. Now it's clear what I'm going to do. I'm going to replace this C with a quantum register, quantum extension, and I'm going to call it the quantum convex hull. So previously I had this convex hull, it was the usual convex hull. And I want to replace the C with a quantum register, quantum extension. I define it to be a quantum convex hull. It's clear that the quantum convex hull contains the usual classical convex hull. And the question is that whether we have equality or the inclusion is strict. Okay. For example, if I show that these are equality, then I can prove that entanglement doesn't help in the Grave-Wiener problem. Because the Grave-Wiener problem is something about conditioning on a quantum register. If I have equality, it means that conditioning a quantum register is the same as conditioning on a classical random variable. And basically, it means that in the Grave-Wiener problem, at least, I don't need entanglement. Entanglement doesn't help.
Sure. So should we think of Q as being distributed to all the n parties?
No. Here Q is, in this general problem, Q is fixed. There's only one extension. It's not in Q.
It's independent of the...
No, it's not independent. No. No, it's, for any x1 to xn, I have something. So think of it as a classical quantum state, where the classical part itself consists of n parts. Okay. So the main result The first main result is the following. It says, so I'm going to list three items, and the first claim is that these three items are equivalent. The first one is just the equivalency of the quantum convex hull and the classical convex hull. The second thing that is equivalent to this one is just the optimization problem I told you. If we consider this optimization problem, we already you saw that. So the claim is that if we take the supremum over all quantum extensions, then we can get to the same number when we take the supremum over classical extensions. Okay. And the last one, which I think is more interesting, is the following. So suppose we have a CQ channel, a channel with classical input and quantum output. If I fix the distribution and the input, I get a joint state on the input and output, and then I can compute the mutual information between the input and output. So I have basically a curve from distribution and the input and to this mutual information, which I'm going to call the mutual information curve or mutual information surface, if you wish. And the claim is that for any such CQ channel, there exists a CC channel, a channel with classical input and output, such that I can approximate the mutual information curve of the CQ channel with the CC channel at all points. Okay? So these three items are equivalent. Okay, is that clear, the statement of the? So going from 1 to 2 is immediate. I mean, I just, the objective function in item 2 and also the constraint can be written in terms of conditioning basically. And item 1 says that conditioning a quantum register is the same as conditioning a classical register. If they are the same, I can replace everything with something classical. Okay, so it's clear going from 1 to 2. And also going from 3 to 1 is easy because if I have n random variables, x1 to xn, I can think of the whole x1 to xn as a single random variable x and think of x to q as a channel. Okay? Now I can, by 3, approximate the mutual information curve corresponding to the CQ channel with the classical channel. Okay. Then it means that the mutual information between X and Q is the same as the mutual information between X and some C, some classical C. Okay. And then using some classical inequalities and also chain rule of mutual information, it can show that when the mutual information and X and Q is let's say equal to the mutual information between X and C, then the mutual information between each of Xj's and Q is equal to the mutual information between Xj and C. Okay, that's basically some standard inequality. So that's also not that much hard and easy to get. So the most interesting case is going from 2 to 3. Okay. So I'm going to assume that this optimization problem is achieved. The optimal point can be assumed to be classical, and I want to approximate this mutual information curve. Okay. So I'm going to start with the assumption. So the assumption says that if I have some extension Q and I compute the difference between these mutual information, I can it's less than or equal than when I maximize over classical C's, okay? So that's basically the assumption what I'm gonna start with. It has to be true for any distribution on X, Y, and Z. I'm just gonna write it down, basically, if I maximize. So here, you should think of this optimization. So I have X, and I have Y, and I have Z, and here I have Q. Fix the distribution on X, and then I have this channel, then It means that I have this joint state on Q and X. And also, I'm going to think of Y as being some noisy version of X. So that's why I'm going to, this channel is determined by P of Y given X and also P of Z given X. That's why I'm writing it this way. Okay. So what I'm writing here is just the assumption, nothing more than that. Okay. The next step is to discretize the set of classical channels from X to C. Okay. Well, we can bound the size of the alphabet size of C, we already know that, and then by compactness argument, we can discretize that. So on the right-hand side, instead of zero, we get epsilon, and then we get the same thing. So instead of maximizing over all channels, I want to maximize over an epsilon net. And the next step is that instead of optimizing over all channels, I can, this difference of mutual information, I can consider a convex combination over all this, over basically this epsilon net, and then maximize over this weight lambda n. Okay. And now, you know, think of this maximum, there's a minus sign behind it. I want to take the maximum out. The maximum becomes a minimum. So it becomes a minimum. And so I have this equation. Now it's clear what I'm going to do. I'm going to use the minimax theorem. But the minimax theorem, there exists fixed weights lambda such that for any channels, from X to Y and X to Z, this expression is less than epsilon. Okay, that's basically using the minimax theorem. And also the next step is that, you know, write everything instead of mutual information, write everything in terms of entropy and conditional entropy. That's nothing much. And now, so I'm gonna just rearrange the this inequality and write it in this way. And I mean, I didn't do much. I'm just rearranging the same inequality. And also, the second thing that I did, because in the inequality, on the one side I have z, on the other side I have y, and the minimization and maximization are all different channels, they are not related, I'm going to erase this y and write everything in terms of z. So there's a maximization on the left-hand side in terms of z and a channel from x to z. I mean, it doesn't matter what variables I use. Now, consider this function. So if I have a distribution on the x part, I can I get a marginal state on the Q, so I can compute the mutual information. Also, I can compute the entropy of the CM, basically, when I have, this is the output of the channel, basically. And what's the expression on the left-hand side? I mean, on both sides. It's basically the expression, as you can see, it's just, it's just basically a convex combination of expression like this. I mean, think of this function and think of the linear combinations of some terms, some different points of this function. We basically get to those expressions. So my claim is the following. I mean, suppose that function from P of X to H of Q minus summation of lambda M H of Cn, suppose the curve of this function is something like this. Okay. Then the expression on the left-hand side is basically the is the same as taking this upper convex envelope. It's this curve. Okay. And the expression on the right-hand side is the function of this form. It's basically this curve. And this inequality says that these two curves, this upper curve and this down curve, are very close to each other, are in epsilon approximation of this. So basically, I have a set. I take the convex hull and take the curve on the upper side of this convex hull and the curve down there. And they are very close to each other. This basically means that the curve is almost linear. If the curve is very close to a linear function, then it means that this upper curve and this down curve here are close to each other. So basically, this assumption means that it's almost linear, and rewriting, I have a summation of this entropy of Cn with some weights. I can write it down as a conditional entropy again, and then move from conditional entropy to the mutual information. Again, that's standard. Whatever I get at the end is that going from p of x to this number, difference between this mutual information, this function is almost linear. Also, it's very easy to see that this function is zero at the extreme points, where the distribution on x is just peak. It's just a peak at some point. In that case, the difference is just zero. It means that so I have a function which is zero at the extreme points and also almost linear. It means that it's almost zero. And that's basically what I wanted to prove. I wanted to prove that I can approximate the mutual information curve corresponding to a CQ channel with the mutual information curve corresponding to a classical channel. Okay. So I have this theorem. You get the proof. And the second theorem is that there's a counterexample for part one. Okay. So you may say that, OK, why would you care to prove such a theorem and then show that this is not true, none of these items? I'll talk about this counterexample. But we have this counterexample. But in this counterexample, we have like the size of the classical part is x is very large. And also the dimension of Q is also large. But probably the same theorem may be true for smaller sizes. I mean, for example, if we have this Graviner problem over like bits, if each of these xi is a bit, then in that case it might be true. Also, the second is that the approach, I mean, the idea in the proof of this theorem is basically, first, it was a discretization, and then using the minimax theory. And in that case, I didn't really use the classicality of the channel from X to C, or usual, and also the fact that Q is a quantum state. I mean, the approach is very general. So we might be able to use it, for example, to compare like a classical CQ channel to a CQ channel in which the dimension of the output is bounded. I'll talk about that later. So I think although this, none of the statements in this theorem are true, we might be able to use the ideas behind this theorem to prove some the same statement, but in some other special cases. So let me talk about the counterexample. I would say, surprisingly, this counterexample is based on zero error capacity. I mean, what we think that, you know, zero error capacity has nothing to do with mutual information and entropy, but apparently it does. I mean, it was kind of a surprise for even ourselves that this. So suppose we have a channel, okay, completely a classical channel from x to y. And fix some distribution over the input of the channel. Basically, I want to consider the uniform distribution over the channel. Okay. And now, assume that there exist two random variables, auxiliary random variable m and c, such that the following hold. These four equations are true. Okay. Then I claim that there exists a zero error communication protocol over this channel x to z. With this rate, log of size of m, I mean, yeah, over this channel. Okay, how we can do that? Think of m to be the message, And think of C to be the shared randomness between the sender and receiver, and X to Y is the channel. Okay. Of course, the shared randomness should be independent of the message, right? Because message is something that you want to send, and shared randomness is something that we agree on before determining what the message is. So the first equation basically says that the shared randomness is independent of the message. The second equation says that X is a function of C and N. This means that the Alice, the sender, can encode the message, having access to the message and also common randomness, can encode it to the input of the channel. Okay? And the third equation basically says that the channel, the output of the channel is independent of the message and also the shared randomness. I mean, it should be true. The last equation says that Bob, the receiver, can encode, can decode. M is the message. It says that M is a function of C and Y. Y is the output of the channel, and C is a shared randomness. He has access to both of them, and he has the input. So, and everything is in a zero error case. For example, he can encode, the entropy of M given CY equal to zero means that M is a function of C and Y with no error. So everything is a zero error scenario. On the other hand, so if C, I told you that you should think of C as the shared randomness. If you think of a quantum C, then basically it means a shared entanglement. Again, you should think of C as Bob's, the receiver's part of the shared state, whatever it's classical or quantum. We know that there exist examples, example of classical channels, in which the one-shot entanglement-assisted zero-error capacity is larger than the usual zero-error capacity, which shared randomness, if you wish. And we can use those channels and also use these ideas to find an example. You may say that these expressions that we have are not at least directly related to this conditioning thing, but everything can be written in terms of conditioning on the C or Q, whatever you want to choose. So we have this theorem, and as I said, in the special case where if we have a CQ channel where the input is binary and the output is a qubit, then we can actually replace it with a classical channel. We can actually exactly write the mutual information curve as a mutual information curve for a classical channel. So for the special cases, it's true. Okay. So as I said, we started with this optimization problem, and we compared two cases. The first case was the classical Q and also quantum Q. We compared them together. We used Minimax theorem and then find something about the mutual information curve. We can repeat the same thing, exactly the same argument, and talk about a general quantum Q and a quantum Q in which the dimension is bounded. We can compare these two and find the same theory. I mean, something similar, not exactly the same, but something similar. So I want to say that these techniques are pretty general, and we might be able to use these techniques to actually find something about dimension bounds. Okay. And basically, these techniques says that we want to understand the behavior of this mutual information curve as we increase the dimension of the outputs, how they behave. Do they really get richer and richer when we increase the dimension, or they are almost the same? Okay. So I want to talk a bit more about this entanglement-assisted capacity. So as I said, we know that entanglement doesn't help in the problem of a communication, point-to-point communication over a classical channel. And as far as I know, at least, we don't know any example of a classical communication problem in which, an information theoretic problem in which entanglement helps. And so the question is that whether entanglement ever helps in a classical communication setting or not. Okay. Probably your answer is yes, because we have this Bell experiment. We know that in a Bell setting, entanglement helps. But Bell setting is not of the kind of problems we usually consider in information theory. In information theory, we usually consider repeated trials of the same thing, and also we consider asymptotically vanishing property of error. And Bell experiment is not of this form. But we can consider these things. I mean, what's Bell setting? Basically, it's generating some bipartite correlation, right? And we can ask. How much communication do we need to simulate some bipartite correlation? And think of this problem in an information theoretic setting. And the problem is that whether entanglement helps in this problem or not. Okay. So the problem is of this form. Think of a distribution over four random variables, x, y, a, and b. And assume that Alice and Bob receive X and Y. So again, repeated samples of X and Y with distribution, this marginal distribution P of X, Y. And Alice sends a message, prepares and sends a message to Bob, classical message. And the goal of Alice to output A, the goal of Bob is to output Bob, such that the marginal distribution over the input and output is the given distribution over X, Y, A, and okay, so that's the problem. And the problem is how much communication do we need? Okay. And this problem has been solved recently in the classical case by Yasai and his co-authors. And they showed that the minimum rate of communication that is needed to generate these kind of correlations is given by this optimization problem, basically. So if you should think of F as the message that is sent. The first Markov chain basically says that Alice given X independent of Y should be able to generate the message. Out of the message and her input X independent of Y and B, she should be able to generate her output A. That's the second Markov chain condition. And the third Markov chain condition says that Bob should be able to generate out of the message and his input the output. And the amount of communication is the mutual information of X and F given Y. Okay. And again, using this car theory technique, we can bound the dimension of this auxiliary F, the size of, because it's a random variable. And we could generalize this problem to the entanglement-assisted version. So if Alice and Bob, so if we have the same problem, but now Alice and Bob are provided with arbitrary amount of entanglement. Well, the expression may seem kind of different to the classical case, but it's really the same. So there are two differences. The first difference is that there's an epsilon around. Okay. The second difference is the existence of the CPTP map. Okay. Well, we have this. We should consider this map because of that's basically the translation of this third Markov chain condition. Because we have this Markov chain when all the three random variables exist at the same time. But in the quantum case, when we apply some operation of the quantum register and generate something classical, doesn't matter, they don't exist at the same time. That's why we write it that way in terms of some existence of some map. But that's basically the third Markov chain condition. Also, we have some epsilon around because we don't have a dimension bound. I mean, this epsilon is also there in the classical case. It doesn't matter. But in the classical case, we have a dimension bound, and then using some compactness argument based on this dimension bound, we can show that the intersection of all these these quantities, well, we have some regions, the intersection of all of them over all positive epsilon is actually equal to S0 because of dimension bound. In a quantum case, we don't have this dimension bound. That's why it seems a bit different. But that's basically the same result. I mean, the same region. It doesn't matter. We just replace this F with a Q, with a quantum. Okay. So we had this F here in the classical case, replace it with something quantum, we get the same thing. And the proof is not that much hard. The converse, which is part one, is basically follows from the same converse proof in the classical case, no difference. And the second part, which is the achievability, comes from the some remote asset preparation protocol, okay, so, which I don't want to talk about. So let's apply these two theorems. Well, I should say not the second one, because in the second one, as I said, we have this, again, this region. I mean, we have this entanglement-assisted amount of communication that is required, but we cannot compute it because we don't have a dimension bound. Okay. But we can compute it in the classical case. So I'm going to consider these kind of correlations, these the CHSH type correlations, and I can compute the amount of required communication. So when alpha is 3 over 4, this is this point here, we know that we don't need any communication. Communication is 0. But when alpha is equal to 1, which corresponds to the perfect PR box, we need 1 bit of communication. That's the blue curve corresponding to shared randomness. And the red curve is just a lower bound on the entanglement assisted case. As I said, we cannot compute it exactly because we don't have a dimension bound, but we have a lower bound. And as you see in the point here, at the point that the red curve touches the x-axis, it's just a zero zone bound. At the zero zone bound, we know that we don't need any communication to simulate the corresponding correlation, but the amount of communication is positive at that point in the classical case. So even in the information theoretic setting of the Bell experiment, entanglement helps. And again, as far as I know, this is the first example of an information theory classical communication problem in which entanglement helps. I mean, it's not a surprise, but at least it's proved. Okay. So let me summarize. So I showed you the problem of simulation of bipartite correlations. In an information theoretic setting, I should say that this problem has have been attacked previously. For example, you know the famous results by Dave Bacon, I guess, and also, for example, the result by Ben Toner and Adet Rigiv, who show that 2 bits of communication is sufficient to simulate any, I would say, XOR type correlation. But their result is it's like in a one-shot case. And also there are some results in the multi-shot case, but they are not assuming asymptotically vanishing probability of error. So this is the first result of this kind. Also, I showed that this quantum conditioning or quantum convexification is strictly greater than classical usual convexification, but as I said, equality may hold in certain cases. I mean, in the counterexample that we have some. So, for example, we don't have any counterexample in which the dimension of the Q, the quantum part, is 2. For example, we don't have any example. Basically, because we don't have any Kolken-Sperker set in dimension 2. But so probably it's true for dimension 2. We can for a two-dimensional system, we can replace it with a classical. In a very special case in which we have a CQ channel with a binary input, we actually have a proof. But in general, we don't know whether we have equality or not. And also, as I said, these techniques can be used to find, probably can be used to find dimension bounds to to actually get such a result, we should be able to understand these curves, these mutual information curves for each dimension. So fix a channel with output, something quantum output of dimension 3, compute this mutual information curve, and then compute the same thing for dimension 4 and so on, and then compare these things together. If we could be able to compare this thing or say something about this, we can be able to say something about this dimension bounds. And finally, we said that this quantum convexification is really greater than the classical communication. But it's not fair because, you know, when we talk about information theory, we usually talk about the multi-letter version of problems, right? Not the single-letter version. When in the multi-letter version, if we consider, let's say, the classical convexification, we should consider quantities like this, the average of the 1 over m of the entropy of x1 when we have iid copies of m iid copies of x1 conditions on some c. And then take the union over all m, and then take the closure of that set, and then compare it to the same thing in there for the quantum case. Okay, I mean, that's probably a more reasonable comparison. In that case, we may get equality. Okay, we don't know the answer, whether we have equality or it's strict. The examples that we have, the counterexample that we have in the single letter case, is based on zero error capacity. But when we take the union and also we take the closure, it means that basically it means that we take some asymptotically vanishing error. And we know that the channel capacity does not increase when we add entanglement. In zero error capacity, it helps. But when we allow asymptotically vanishing error, it doesn't help. It means that those kind of counterexamples cannot at least directly be used to separate these two sets, this multi-letter version. And also, probably it's the case that these are equal, the quantum multi-letter convex hull and the classical multi-letter convex hull. If they are equal, again, probably, I haven't checked that in detail, but probably using results of this form, we can actually prove that entanglement doesn't help in the Gray-Wiener problem. Because in the Gray-Wiener problem, although we have a single letter expression, the multi-letter version of the same expression would be itself. It's nothing different. But the quantum convex hull or classical convex hull, they are different. Okay, we know that they are different. So probably, I guess the next step would be comparing these two sets. Okay, I want to stop here just saying that you can find the details in this paper.
Questions? Do you have examples of optimization problems where the auxiliary register has unbounded dimension? You need unbounded dimension to achieve that?
No, I don't have any. That's a good question. I mean, we have lots of, for example, a squash entanglement, but we don't know any example of a state, as far as I know, for which we need infinite dimension to get the optimal points. I don't know.
Do you know of any classical problems where there's no upper bound? No.
There are some problems, classical problems, in which we don't know. We can't prove. I mean, we can't use this standard technique, this Karatiuduri theorem. But I can't recall them. I can check for it. But I know there are some examples. I mean, it's a powerful tool, but it doesn't work.
Questions? not, then let's thank the speaker again.